Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Has the definition of the word peace changed recently? Will the Trump peace plan actually create peace in Palestine? Then there is the Nobel Peace Prize. Did the Nobel Committee just greenlight Trump's regime change war on Venezuela? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Okay, let's kick it off with Mark here in Moscow. Trump didn't get the Nobel Peace Prize. Oh, well, I think we pretty much expected it. But there's always next year. But even if he had gotten it, it wouldn't be for peace, because what we have now, his now famous, if not infamous, peace plan to bring an end to Israel's assault on Gaza, it's not a peace plan, even if you look at the 20 points. It is a controlled occupation, internationalized, of the people of Gaza, not just the Palestinians, because it doesn't include the West Bank. But if there's anything part of the deal that's real that I think we can talk about, it is a captive exchange. So what else is there? And George and I have talked about this many times, and I'm going to give him the floor. There is an internationalization of it. I'm not sure if it matters. Mark.
Yeah, this is it's certainly not a deal. And it's very unlikely to bring any peace. I think the best way of determining it would be a colonialist diktat, because it is, of course, being imposed on threat of a literal hellfire, as Trump described it.
As if that hasn't happened for 2 years.
Yeah. We certainly don't want any more of that exactly. In Gaza. There's barely a building left standing at this point. First of all, it has to be said that we've been here before, because when Trump first came into office, even in the second administration, there was another ceasefire plan that was internationalized, and it was supposed to facilitate hostage exchange and bring a ceasefire. And that didn't really last very long. It fulfilled Trump's campaign promise of bringing peace to the Middle East in a few days. But of course, there was very little reality to it. And I think there's going to be very little reality to this. I think that it will be maintained long enough for the Israelis to get those who have been taken prisoner by Hamas returned, although they're already backing out of their terms of the deal, because they are now the list of Hamas prisoners, of Palestinians, Hamas and Palestinians in general, that are supposed to be released by Israel, they're already saying, yeah, not him, not him, not him, not him, going down the list and providing a fraction of what they were supposed to release. So already we're not off to a very good start. But ultimately, let's be frank, Israel is never going to allow Arab or other Islamic peacekeepers in what they consider to be greater Israel. So eventually, a week, 2 weeks, a month down the line, Hamas is going to be blamed for something, and then it'll be back to killing Palestinians all over again. And you know, Trump, you know, he already missed the Nobel Prize this year, so you know, I guess he'll just have to end peace in another seven wars next year or something.
George, it's really interesting looking at the coverage of this and individuals that I think all three of us admire and respect. There's quite a bit of disagreement what this all means. For me, it all kind of gets distilled down to one thing: Trump. George.
I think that's right, because for once in his political career, which, let's say, started around 2015, Trump is the international hero of the hour. He is admired throughout the world. He's hailed as the man who brought peace to Gaza.
Oh, that's what his supporters say.
No, it goes much, much beyond his supporters. This goes to the UN Secretary General. This goes to people throughout Europe, people who have no real time for him. They, you know, even, you know, in the on Saturday night at the rally at Hostage Square in Israel, it was striking that when Steve Witkoff mentioned Trump's name, the crowd erupted in huge chants of Trump. When he mentioned Netanyahu's name, the crowd erupted in loud boos. So it's Trump who is this being hailed as the man who brought peace. Well, that would mean that for Trump to walk away from this would be a very big deal for him, because then, you know, he ceases to be this popular man. And he himself realized, hey, even the fake media are praising me, and they're admiring me. So it's going to be difficult for him. And then on Monday, he's holding this peace conference jointly. He's going to chair jointly with Egypt's President Sisi. So, and that's going to be very well attended. That's going to be, you know, again, UN Secretary General is going to be there. Macron's going to be there. Maloney. It's going to be Starmer. It's going to be a huge international jamboree.
Yeah, but are they there? Are they there to make sure Trump keeps his word?
Okay, well, but I think that's why. I think they want to lock him in, lock everybody into this deal so that nobody gets to walk away. I mean, it's always possible. There's nothing.
But
it's going to be quite difficult.
Yeah, but Mark, I mean, the Israelis are already walking away from it.
I mean, the Israelis are already.
I mean, what does withdrawal mean? It means different things to different people. What does disarmament mean? It means different things to different people. And apparently, it's fluid, it changes through time. Mark.
Yeah, and ultimately, as the Russian president pointed out, well, it doesn't address the root cause of the problem, which is there is no Palestinian state and Israel won't allow one. And I'm not really sure what world some people are living in, that they think Donald Trump is some hero around the world for this. I think he's seen more as a mafia figure imposing a colonialist. On the Palestinians at this point, it amounts to Hamas's capitulation. And I'm not sure that Hamas is in dissolution. And I don't think Hamas is going to accept that. I don't think the Palestinian people are going to accept that. And I know Israel is not going to accept that. This is a created narrative propaganda event for Trump's self-aggrandizement. And everyone is playing along up until Israel drops the other shoe and goes back to killing Palestinians.
We have here, let me throw it back to George, what we have here, again, it's early days in all of this. And I think we are going through a form of political theater, because my skepticism demands me to think that until we get more results here. Trump is investing a lot in this, at least at this point in time. But we have basically a Lebanon situation. Israel and Lebanon have a truce, but it's violated every single day. And this is what I think is going to happen with Gaza. There's a truce, but not much of a truce. And if you look at Israeli media, they're saying that we have no intention of going beyond the Pearson extent. They're saying that in Hebrew media. Sure.
That's not what the Israeli foreign minister said. He said this is the end. I mean, he has said this is the end.
Well, the end of what?
Well, okay. Phase one. Well, he said the end of phase one.
No, end of the war. He said we're not going to restart this war after the release of the hostage. That's the Israeli foreign minister. I'm not saying, you know, it's possible. I mean, absolutely, it could happen. However, with a view to what? I mean, if Israel starts it up again, it's not going to get anywhere much further than what it's got at the moment. The Israeli public does not have the stomach for a massive ethnic cleansing campaign. The 2 million.
Oh, I disagree with you on that.
The public, they don't have 2 million. Why haven't they done it so far? They've had 2 years and they haven't done it. So that's so. They're going to start it up again. It just can't. They can absolutely break the ceasefire and start, you know, shooting up here and there. That could happen. But the idea that they're going to relaunch a war like the one that they've been waging for the past 2 years, I think that's very unlikely.
I still think they want to expel the people there. And that's why that's why they destroyed Gaza, to make it uninhabitable so people will be forced.
But it didn't work. They want the people are not moving. They're not going anywhere.
Israeli public opinion is completely behind the expulsion of the Palestinians. They're saying they have no stomach for it. They have the United States.
They have no stomach for it. That's the view of Smotrich. It's the view of Ben-Gvir. And the fact is, they haven't done it. They've had 2 years and they haven't done it. I mean, anyone can say, oh, yeah, we like the Palestinians to go. But actually carrying it out, that's a very different matter. I don't think they've had 2 years and they could have said, this is the biggest killing of Jews since the Holocaust. They didn't do it. So,
go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, okay. So first of all, the Israeli population is completely behind it. I mean, there are polls, conducted by, reputed sociological institutions out there to the tune of 75% of the Israeli population supports the literal ethnic cleansing of
Palestine. So why hasn't it been done?
Why hasn't it been done? It is being done.
But it hasn't been done.
800,000 Palestinians were driven out of Gaza City into a tiny corner of the Gaza Strip. The only reason they haven't been driven into the Sinai Peninsula is because Egypt has, up until this point, refused. And Jordan has.
And it will go on refusing.
I wish I had your confidence.
It's not going to go along with it.
Yeah. Right now, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of Palestinian children literally dying of starvation every day. Ethnic cleansing and genocide is happening right now as we are talking. It is according to the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov that the official number is 67,000 dead, but that he has been told by UN experts that the real number is 10 times that, which is 670,000 dead Palestinians out of a original population in Gaza of just over 2 million. That is well beyond the definition.
Well, that is well beyond if that number is true, but just because he said it doesn't make it true. The fact is that it has not happened so far. And they've had 2 years of this. This is, anyone can talk, big talk, with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, are we going to do this? They haven't done it. And it's very unlikely that they're going to do it now. It's one thing that they're going to break the ceasefire and they're going to start attacking.
Well, I mean, okay, hang on, gents. Israel's breaking every single ceasefire in during this whole catastrophe. I don't know why it won't continue to do that. But to be determined, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Speaking of news, George, well, the Nobel Prize was awarded. I think it's so degraded itself. I mean, it's just kind of a Western vanity award now. I mean, it's obviously a showcase, a soft power op for Western hegemony, imperialism, whatever word you want. So who won the award after? I mean, what did Venezuela win it? Did Trump win it? What's going on here? Because all three of us are aware of this Machado woman. Last person on my list for the Peace Prize, George.
Maria Corina Machado. It's the last person you'd think, but apparently somebody had got wind of it and were placing bets on her just, 24 hours before the announcement. So it was we may not have known about this, but some people had the inside track on this. It's quite a remarkable award because this is a person who has done nothing to advance the cause of peace, which is the ostensible purpose of this award. She has been among the most extreme of the opposition in Venezuela. She has called for foreign intervention inside of Venezuela to remove Maduro. She has supported President Trump's starting up of this war in the Caribbean and the claim that somehow President Maduro is the head of this global narco terrorist cabal. She supported this war in the Caribbean, and And clearly, even among the Venezuelan opposition, she's quite remarkable in supporting sanctions, supporting the coup in 2019, and in demanding that the rest of the world step in, including use of force, to overthrow the government. That's quite a package for a peace laureate.
And it's public. It's available to the public. A letter she wrote to Benjamin Netanyahu asking for military intervention all the way to Israel. Mark, I think George just described Pinochet in a skirt.
Yeah, she is, you know, a non-entity outside of U.S. support. I mean, she is another a Quisling, a regime change puppet in waiting. Juan Guaido has passed his expiry date, and she is the new mantle of U.S. imperialism in South America. And what the Norwegians have done here with their Nobel Imperialism Prize is given the green light, right? I mean, the Europeans are well aware. They're in a very bad energy situation right now in terms of gas and oil. And Venezuela has the largest proven energy reserves in the world. And while U.S. LNG, four times more expensive than the gas the Europeans have denied themselves, it's simply it can't meet the quantities required for European energy. So obviously, a regime change bringing together a U.S. A client regime in Venezuela would really help the Europeans. And that's clearly what they're signaling here. This is obviously what the attention. I think there's also, at least within the minds of some of the people in the blob, the deep state, and Langley and the Pentagon, a bit of geopolitical chess going on here. Oh, yeah, you're going to try to take our proxy knight in Ukraine away from us? Well, how you like that? We're going to take Syria away from you. We're going to flip Nepal, and we're going to take Venezuela while we're at it. This is the thinking of a lot of people, that we are in actually a geopolitical endgame for the world order. And Venezuela is seen as the low-hanging fruit. Iran proved a little too high for them to be able to pluck carefully, and Russia even higher. But Venezuela, that is a little bit easier within reach of the United States, and Trump needs a win. I remember not too long ago when he committed himself to no more regime change in the world. Well, we know that's why that Maduro isn't actually a regime. He's just a narco terrorist. So that makes it easy, right?
Yeah, George, you and I, and Mark also on this program here, we've talked about the end of the rules-based order, even if I don't know if it ever existed, but at least the narrative. And we've gone back to great power politics, very similar to like the 19th century. I think Mark just perfectly described it, okay? I mean, you're going to take that piece off. You took our knight, we're going to take your queen, okay? And I think there's a lot to it. But it really puts a stain on the Nobel Committee, because they're supposed to be promoting peace, rewarding people that have achieved peace. And this is, again, as we've all agreed, this is a green light to start another war, which will, as we all know, it never works out the way you plan, George.
No, I think it's absolutely true. And it's very interesting. I mean, I agree with Mark that they're absolutely determined to affect regime change in Venezuela. There was a remarkable article recently in the New York Times saying that there have been negotiations with Maduro and the U.S. government, and that Maduro had made extraordinary offers to the United States, you know, handing over control of the oil industry to the United States. And Trump said no. So this was negotiated. So even this great deal that was on offer, so Trump said no. That means Trump is absolutely determined on removing him. And who is now the likely candidate to replace him? Well, this Maria Corina Machado. And I think that what the Nobel Committee did is essentially provide the rationale, because now the Trump administration, hey, we're replacing this narco-terrorist. with a Nobel laureate. I mean, how can you criticize us for us? I mean, this is a peace prize winner. She is the best possible candidate to be the president of Venezuela. So absolutely, the Nobel Committee has now given the Trump administration, the fig leaf that it wanted. No, this isn't regime change. This isn't a coup. This isn't, American interventionism. This is installing Nobel laureates in power.
Yeah, well, this is a coup, and this is the Oslo coup, Mark.
It's really, I think, akin to the foreign policy moral bankruptcy of the Europeans, that they highlight a regime change like this and facilitate it to this degree. The Nobel Prize has long since ceased to mean anything. I mean, Henry Kissinger, Barack Obama, U.S. Installed the regime change puppet in Myanmar.
Remember Lech Walesa. It plays exactly into your thesis. Okay.
Yes. So, it's not a surprise, but at the same time, it's somehow more blatant this time, actually coming out in front while a U.S. military flotilla literally waits off the coast of Venezuela and is shooting ships out of the water, right, in international waters. They've raised their hypocrisy to the cry of a peace prize to extraordinary, never before seen levels.
Yeah, and plus, there's also a narrative element to all of this, George, is that it's all being done in the name of democracy, okay? Which this Machado woman, if you look at her public opinion standing within Venezuela, she's not even popular among the opposition. Okay, I mean, she's a minority of a minority, but she's being elevated to an international status now.
Yeah, she's absolutely not popular among the opposition because she is more extreme than...
Because she's in the pay. She's in the pay of a foreign government.
She's got the most important constituents, Mark Rubio.
That's right, Michael Rubio. And the fact that she has actually advocated sanctions against her own country. She has advocated foreign military intervention against her own country. And now she has supported this war in the Caribbean, this blowing up of ships without any kind of due process, any determination. So, yeah, this is absolutely right. Maduro is indeed head of this narco-terrorist cabal. So even she doesn't even have the sort of the minimum I'm a democracy person, so I'm not really in favor of foreign interventionism. I'm not in favor of war. No, she's absolutely in favor of foreign intervention, absolutely in favor of war. And that's why even her colleagues in the opposition just thought that she is so extreme, she's actually helping to discredit our cause.
And so, Mark, as we all know, that Donald Trump always is in search of a win, even though he claims to have ended all of these wars. It doesn't cut any ice with me. How easy would it be for a regime change in Venezuela?
Well, Venezuela doesn't have a large or, shall we say, very capable military. They do have some older Russian S-300s. Now, it's true that Russia and Venezuela just signed a new strategic partnership. In fact, just this last week, Maduro signed it into law on the date of Putin's 73rd birthday. But the truth is that Venezuela doesn't really have any allies that are going to be willing to cross the U.S. To defend it. Russia and China are simply too far away. They don't have the ability to power project into the Caribbean. And Brazil, Lula hasn't had great relations with Maduro, and he's certainly not going to stick out his neck. He may offer criticism, but ultimately the CIA has proven extremely capable in such situations of buying out, of co-opting, blackmailing, right? Just like we saw Israel attempt in Iran and succeed at very successfully.
They did with Syria. It was very successful
as well. Yes, so it's going to be a problem. What we don't know is how willing Venezuelan people who do believe in the Bolivarian Revolution are willing to wage what will have to be a very bloody counterinsurgency war against, the U.S.-installed oligarchs in Venezuela. They will be able to decapitate the Venezuelan government, but can they control Venezuela?
It may be worth it. There's a heck of a lot of oil there. I suppose the win that Trump will get is the Monroe Doctrine is alive and well, sending a message to the Russians and the Chinese. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. Next time, remember, Crosstalk rules.